It's much better than that.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Healthcare. It is 1 o'clock, February 28th, last day of February. Spring is around the corner.
Tell that to the snow at my house.
I know. With that, I'd like to open a work session on introduction of committee measures.
Madam Chair, I move the following LCs be introduced as committee bills. LC 3473, dated 1/31/2017. LC 3559, dated 2/3/2017. LC 3588, dated 2/9/2017. And LC 4021, dated 2/9/2017.
Senator Cruz moves that LC 3473, dated 1/31/2017, LC 3559, dated 2/3/2017, LC 3588, dated 2/9/2017, and LC 4021, dated 2/9/2017, be introduced as committee bills. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered, I'll close the work session on introduction of committee measures, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2267. And who's here?
Senator Monis Anderson and members of the committee, my name is Ed Conlow. I'm the executive director of the Board of Medical Imaging. House Bill 2267 accomplishes three things. It allows the board to exempt ophthalmic sonography from our licensure requirement. Recently, we discovered that there are two individuals at the OHSU's Casey Eye Institute who are ophthalmic sonographers. And it's a very specialized area that they just work in ophthalmology. They follow a pathway that's different from any of the registries that we use. I asked the board what they want to do with these folks, and they said maybe we at this point we could exempt them from licensure. They're very specialized in what they do, and they have a separate pathway, and they go through a registry called the Joint Commission for Allied Health Personnel and Ophthalmology, so we know they're trained and registered. The second thing this bill does is allows the board to designate certain offenses as non-disciplinary, and this is modeled after HB 2475 that was adopted in 2015. So currently, any disciplinary action that the board undertakes against a license, we have to report to the National Registry that they have gotten their credential from, as well as the Health Practitioner Data Bank. This would allow the board to identify through rule minor infractions that do not involve patient safety, could it designate those, it could still issue a civil penalty up to $100, wouldn't have to designate it as a disciplinary action. That way, it wouldn't have to go on go out to all the registries and everything as a disciplinary action. The third thing that this legislation does is allows the board to recognize the credential of the International Society of Clinical Densitometry. Currently, if you do bone densitometry in Oregon and you're not a physician, then you need to have a you need to have a permit from the board. It's a low dose X-ray, and it requires a permit. Currently, there's one person that teaches the class to get this permit, and he's at OSU, and we don't even know if he's going to teach the class much longer. So anyway, if we could recognize this registry, this would give us another option. We've spoken with others in the medical imaging field, and this is a feel that this is a valid registry. If we could use this, it gives us another pathway to recognize that credential for bone densitometry. It gives us a little more flexibility so that people can get that credential. Thank you.
I just have one question regarding the ophthalmic sonography. So we are exempting these people, but is there a way, if there is a complaint regarding the services that they render, where do they go then? Because wouldn't they go to you if there was a complaint?
I mean, I think it would if it was a complaint and they were, say, at OHSU, it might go through the institutional process. It wouldn't go through us if they don't have a license.
Okay, but it exempts persons who operate dental X-ray equipment for the sole purpose of oral radiography.
Correct.
And then what if there is misuse? Would that be through the dentist?
That would be through the dental board.
Through the dental board. Okay. I just want to make sure that when you're exempting these people, that there is a way for them to be held accountable for their performance. Senator Steiner Hayward.
Okay, I'm going to display my professional bias here. I do not trust the International Society for Clinical Densitometry, and I will speak from personal experience, and I am actually a certified clinical densitometrist myself, a physician who can read those. I think their whole society is, I don't even know the polite word to use for it. Their exams are arcane. They are not well. The courses that they offer are basically extortionate. I'm exaggerating only a little bit. I cannot tell you how much money my practice and I had to invest in order to get me, and I've never failed an exam before in my life, and I failed their exam ever. I'm putting it on the record because I'm just saying that it says something. And I get that you don't have people who teach this, but I'm a little hard-pressed to understand why our colleagues at OIT down in Klamath can't offer this course and why this is so specialized that it can't be, there aren't other ways to train people to do this. I mean, these machines are not uncommon and this process is not uncommon anymore. And to rely on ISCD is to assume that they have to be certified by these people to do this, I think puts a lot of techs in a really tough position. I talked to the techs in my office who were certified to do this, because we used to do this as an outpatient in my clinical practice. They went through just as much misery as I did, to use a polite word, to get this. And these are intelligent women who did just fine in their other training. So I get that you're kind of over a barrel at the moment, but I would urge the board to figure out whether there's another path toward doing it. And I think that they're monopolistic, and I will stop ranting. But I really don't like them at all.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Colleagues, are you comfortable in moving this bill next Thursday? Okay, so can we post this as a work session on Thursday. You don't need to come, you know, unless you want to. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2267 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 817. Let's see. I think Len Bergstein, Dave Sanders, Mark Zietzer, and Elizabeth Rimley.
Chair Mona Sanderson and members of the Health Committee. My name is Len Bergstein. I'm here representing Zoom Plus Care to speak in support of Senate Bill 817. Appearing with me is Dave Sanders, who is the co-founder of Zoom Plus Care, and also appearing is Mark Zeitzer, who is a board-certified emergency room physician, one of eight of our board-certified emergency room physicians. Mark runs our Zoom Plus Super Clinic. Senate Bill 817 is a modest reform that will have widespread significance in improving health care outcomes for Oregonians, easing the burden of overcrowded ERs, and eliminating wasteful spending in the treatment of medical emergencies. Senate Bill 817 will help this committee continue the important initiatives you have taken to transform the dysfunctions of the 20th century healthcare delivery system. 817 recognizes a simple fact that life-threatening emergency conditions can and should be treated by certified physicians according to state law outside the confines of hospitals licensed under ORS 441025. Individual Oregonians, Oregon businesses, the state of Oregon, and taxpayers would benefit from reform like Senate Bill 817 that reduce wasteful excess utilization of hospital ERs. Of course, Oregon's not the only place where this dysfunction occurs. Decades of public policy research have studied this problem and reached a consensus on the facts. 30% waste in our national healthcare system is attributed to ER overuse. $38 billion annually is wasteful spending is attributed to excess ER use, and 50% of ER visits could be avoided and treated safely in an alternative appropriate setting. In our presented materials, we've given you some citations to journals that are highly regarded at a national level for and our seminal works on this, and anybody who kind of disputes that is running against the tide of consensus of facts in America. At Zoom Plus Care, our 10-year experience providing innovative healthcare delivery in Oregon has helped us identify how this wasteful dysfunction can be addressed by designing a system of care that offers clinical services to fill the gap between urgent care and the hospital ER. In his testimony, Dave Sanders will describe what we found and the solution we offer to design a more effective and innovative system of frontline care, providing patients with non-life-threatening emergencies an ER physician on demand. Additionally, Mark Zeitzer will describe the conditions we treat at our Zoom Plus Super Clinic and why the reform we suggest in Senate Bill 817 will help you build a modern delivery system that lowers the cost of care without sacrificing patient safety. Mark's testimony will provide you with a day in the life of Zoom Plus Super's board-certified ER physicians. And just last year, for those of you on this committee I know who are most concerned about saving money, we saved individuals and Oregon businesses who purchased care $22,428,000 by delivering high-quality care for non-life-threatening emergencies at one-tenth the cost of an ER visit. We fully expect that the defenders of the status quo will object to this modest reform and claim confusion and scare you with testimony that care will cost more and people will die because of 817. Of course, that's the same testimony you've heard in the past when you've tackled other reforms of the dysfunctional health care delivery system. Those claims fly in the face of thorough, evidence-based national research and our own experience treating over 1 million patients at Zoom Plus Care clinics in the first 10 years of our experience. Yet, a rule promulgated by the OHA prohibits anyone but hospital ERs from saying or giving the impression they provide emergency medical services. We look forward to working with this committee in your continuing efforts to reform your dysfunctional health care system. Your hard work will continue to design a modern Oregon system that engages and treats consumers at the most accessible, lowest risk, and least costly point of care. I'd now like to have Dr. Sanders continue, if I can, Chair.
Chair and members, Dave Sanders, co-founder and CEO of Zoom. Can you hear me okay? All right, thanks. Great to be here with you. Thank you so much. Over a decade ago, we envisioned a new way of doing health for Oregonians. We saw that Sarah, our customer, had unmet needs. She wanted health care when she wanted and where she wanted for a fair, clear price point. And we designed from the ground up, as citizens of Oregon, a new modern system. And this is what we envisioned. We saw a day when Sarah could go online and chat with her doctor, receive telecare. And if she needed more care, We could then advance her to one of many neighborhood clinics for primary care, for urgent care. If she needed more, we could advance her to our sister specialists and others. And then, if she needed more care, we could then partner with area hospitals. And we've done that. 10 years later, we have now built a system that serves hundreds of thousands of Oregonians just in that way. And I'm very thankful for what you've done over the years to help us get there. In looking at our data, over a million people, we identified an important gap in our services, however. What we saw was that we were sending thousands of people a year, over time, actually, to the emergency room. And these were people who had a specific but a very important set of conditions, things that we knew did not need the overhead, the cost, the risk, the friction of being in an emergency room. Things like serious abdominal pain or pelvic pain and potential fractures, serious skin lesions and wounds. And so this same research that we did on our own population was corroborated by extensive national data. In fact, over the last 25 years, there is no more heavily researched topic than excessive use of American emergency rooms. Between our research and national research, we invented Zoom Plus Care Super. It is Portland's and Oregon's first super clinic. This is open 20 hours a day today, ultimately 24. It's staffed year-round at all hours by board-certified emergency physicians. It has a technician staff providing CT, ultrasound, digital x-ray, and other support providers, PAs, NPs, to support the team. It's a 35-person staff. And a year and a half later from launching this, we've verified that what we saw in our data and national data was in fact true. We now are very effectively caring for thousands of people with Zoom Plus Care Super. However, unfortunately, in the past year, our hospital and ER brethren said, not so fast. We'd like to claim exclusive use of the word emergency. But what we all know provide care for others is that when little Susie falls off the monkey bars, or Tommy can't breathe through his asthma, or Sarah has the worst abdominal pain of her life, it's an emergency. She calls it an emergency. She knows it's an emergency. She thinks of it that way. But the best place to be seen is not in the emergency room. That's why the emergency room waits today are 3 hours, right? And so what we're asking today is your support in backing this modest but meaningful effort to allow us to care for people with a range of emergencies in the most effective, cost-effective, quality-effective place in the system. Now, as Mr. Bernstein said to you, what will happen, and you know what will happen, is that the hospital's emergency colleagues will say people will die. But I want to remind you that I've been with you now for 10 years on this, and you first led the way with us to allow NPs and PAs to practice at the peak of their license. And the same voices said the same things. You work with us to allow us to provide dispensing medications at the point of care, and the exact same claims were made. We work with you on telemedicine repair, and the exact same claims were made. And as you pass those laws and we utilize them to full effect to serve Oregonians, the great thing is that those who said people will die, they soon followed suit. And we're very proud of that. It's a great thing. We've served as a catalyst and leadership, I think, together in advancing these areas. And the same thing will happen here. If you allow us to provide emergency services, not non-life-threatening services for people, you will see the same systems that will say people are going to die. They'll follow suit as well, as they always have before. This is the right thing. Before I close, if you get a chance, just go to zoomcare.com and look up Zoom Super. And what you'll see there is something phenomenal, something beautiful for the citizens of Oregon. What you'll see there are emergency physicians on your beck and call on demand, 20 hours a day. How is that not a great thing for the people of Oregon? Beck and call, on-call emergency physicians, not primary care or even urgent care, but board-certified doctors there to serve you and your family's emergencies around the clock. Thank you for your time, and I want to now connect with my partner, Dr. Zeitzer, to describe a life, a day in the life of Zoom Super.
Hi there. I'm Mark Zeitzer. I am a board-certified emergency physician, and I'm a ASEP member and also an OMA member. I have over 15 years of experience in emergency medicine, and I love emergency medicine. We do an amazing job, cradle to grave, although the state of emergency medicine in this country is very frustrating. So I'd find myself 9 p.m. in an emergency department on a Monday night, pulling my hair out because there were patients in the waiting room in pain. There were patients back in the emergency department, and we were swamped, but we couldn't get to everyone quick enough, and it was incredibly frustrating. And I took this frustration to ZoomCare, and they said, you know what, we've had the same observation. Not everyone belongs in the emergency department. There's a gap. There are emergencies that are non-life-threatening. So I'd like to take you through a day at our super clinic and what we do. I will warn you that some of these pictures are graphic, fair warning. Okay, here we go. So we take care of fractures. We have an amazing facility that is staffed by 8 board-certified emergency physicians. We're there 20 hours a day, 6 a.m. to 2 a.m. We have an entire staff of 35. We have a moderately complex lab that can put out a CBC in 2 minutes. It can do critical labs. We have X-ray on-site. We have CT on-site. We have ultrasound on-site. So is this an emergency? Absolutely. That picture on the left, you see there's a dislocated thumb, and that hurts. And this patient who tripped and fell and dislocated their thumb feels that's an emergency. Can that be treated at a primary care doctor's office or an urgent care? No, they really need the advanced facilities of something like Zoom Super that lies in that gap. And waiting in the waiting room of an emergency department to get this taken care of is not good care. It doesn't serve that person well. Here's a bad abscess in the back of a patient's throat. We see these all the time. These can be complicated. There can be concern for airway. And so it really needs to be treated by an expert in emergency medicine. Does it need to be treated in an emergency department? No, we treat these every day at Zoom Super very successfully, and our patients love it. They get in and out of our facility in less than an hour. We treat these painlessly, and a primary care doctor in urgent care really can't handle these. Here's a shoulder dislocation. Anybody ever had a shoulder dislocation? These hurt. These are very painful injuries. And it takes quite a bit to be able to reduce these, and it needs to be done in the appropriate facility. Does that have to be an emergency department? No, we can treat these very effectively and efficiently at Zoom Super. In and out in less than an hour, seeing a board-certified emergency physician and getting this put back in place. Is that an emergency? To that construction worker, that is absolutely an emergency. And this poor gentleman came to us, and we were able to get that out of his hand very quickly and get him treated effectively and efficiently. And then we also got him follow-up with an orthopedic surgeon within Zoom. And in the typical emergency department, you'd give him a list of 5 orthopedic surgeons and say, good luck. This person left with an appointment the next week to follow up with our orthopedic surgeon. It's just great care, and it's dealt with in a very efficient and effective way. So I love this story. This is a great story. This patient was actually seen at Zoom Care in Salem, and she was complaining of horrible abdominal pain. And she knew that her local emergency department was known to be very, very busy. It's one of the busiest emergency departments from Los Angeles to Seattle. And she said, you know what? I can't sit in the emergency department waiting room with this horrible pain. And so the Zoom Care provider told her, you know, there is an alternative, but it's up in Portland. And she said, I'll take it. So she drove all the way up to Portland to our clinic, and we diagnosed her with appendicitis. We did this without any radiation. We used ultrasound right here, and we identified the appendicitis. We did it quickly and efficiently. We had the diagnosis in less than an hour. And then did we just send her to the emergency department? No, we got her admitted directly to the hospital, got her to a general surgeon to get her appendix out. So we're helping decompress the emergency departments, which are really overburdened. This is a very important feature. This is very important to our public health. This patient was enormously grateful. Here's a patient who has a very painful corneal abrasion. This happens, and it's very painful and needs quick and immediate help. Most primary care doctors don't feel comfortable doing this. Does it really need an emergency department? No, it can be dealt with in a more effective and efficient way. Here's a horrible laceration. So this patient was using a utility knife, and they cut their hand. It's pretty complicated. You can see that there's adipose tissue there. There could be some muscle involvement, tendon involvement. There could be a fracture. You need a more advanced facility. You need something with board-certified emergency physicians. You need imaging capability. And you can see we did a beautiful job. That healed up really well. Here's another example. You'll see on the picture on the left where the nose would be, there's this little white spot, and that's actually a piece of metal. This person was grinding metal, and the grommet exploded in his face. And so most primary care doctors would call 911, which I totally understand, but at a facility like Zoom Super, we can take care of these, and we actually got that piece of metal out. You can see it on the right picture is a piece of metal that we pulled out of that gentleman's nose. And we had the imaging capabilities to know that there weren't any other emergencies going on, and he was dealt with efficiently and effectively. This is a great story. This young lady was scooting around on the wood floors of her home that had recently been sanded down in fleece pajamas. It was Christmas Day, and this splinter, more like a log, got jammed up in her thigh. It's 12 centimeters long. And Zoom Super is open 7 days a week, 20 hours a day. She came in, and we were very quickly able to remove that in a painless way. Patient got back to celebrating Christmas. It was really wonderful, and that's a very memorable splinter that we were able to take out of her leg there. Our patients love it, and they really find it that it's so important. I love this. This was from an 8-year-old little girl, and she's a true Oregonian. She'd put a bird on it there for us. But she really appreciated having her emergency dealt with quickly and easily, not having to spend 4-6 hours in a waiting room. And this really sums it up. So we appreciate the opportunity to treat non-life-threatening emergencies here in Oregon.
Discussion.
Question?
Yes. Senator Buck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Doctors, based on your presentation, it appears to me that there's nothing in the existing statutes or rule that precludes you from providing all the services that you just described. Is that correct?
I think the heart of the issue is I think it does preclude us from saying who we are and what we do. It puts us in a compromised position as we interpret the rule to say that we are emergency physicians providing care on demand to the community for a wide range of true emergencies as the public sees it. That's, I think, how I think about it.
So it's an advertising issue.
It's more than that, I think, Senator Chair Mona Sanderson. You've asked a good question, but clearly the statutes define what's an emergency medical services. It's very clear. And then the OHA went further and said no one can give the impression that emergency medical services, such as those defined in the OARs, is provided by a person in a particular facility unless that facility is licensed at a hospital. And furthermore, they go on and say, we're going to figure out how to investigate and determine a violation by considering the facility name, the advertising used, and related content. I mean, there's absolutely nothing in what's happened to clarify in the Oregon law what is and what is not considered service. So on top of this very clear clinical gap that we've identified and that is identified around the country, the statutes and the rules work to frustrate the kind of reform that we're proposing to be dealt with in this policy set.
So you think there's patient confusion about services might be provided?
Well, Chair Mona Sanderson and Senator Beyer, I'd like to have everybody else answer, chime in on that too. We find no confusion, okay? We've been operating now with 18 months of experience plus the 10 years of our experience. Our patients know, we trust Oregonians to know when they've got a problem, when they don't, that needs a 911. We've had 0.13% of people present themselves at our Zoom clinic that are in the wrong place. And when they're in the wrong place, it's their lucky day because they wind up getting treated and welcomed by Dr. Zeitzer, who is a board-certified ER physician, stabilized, treated, and then, as he said, in the case where he sent it on to another hospital, they get to be moved to the front of the line. So when I read the testimony that's going to be coming for you later on, that either there's a slowdown in service or there's confusion or whatever, I say that that's completely wrong. It flies in the face of our experience and the national experience. David, do you want to answer that?
No, I think you've addressed it 100%. I mean, the fact is we've been providing just urgent care in neighborhood clinics for a decade. There, we have no experienced people there going to the wrong place, and certainly a year and a half of running Zoom Super, there is no experience. And again, very strong national research actually going the contrary, all showing that there's really excess utilization, right? And really there's no research showing that there is inappropriate utilization. People are not going in when they should be calling 911. There's just no evidence of that.
I just note your testimony, and I'd quote it, said it has been Zoom Care's experience in 10 years of delivering care at more than 20 locations all over the region. The patients are, in fact, very good at picking the right facility to receive care. And I guess I'm still searching for, given that and given the word urgent, I don't see where there's a problem.
Well, I think there has not been a problem. The concern is that with the OHA rule, there is a problem. I think that this is vital. I think this vital solution. There's a gap under between urgent primary care and emergency room. That gap is being filled by Zoom Plus Care Super. It's being filled because we're able to communicate and deliver those services in that gap. If we can't, if we have ambiguity about, and today we wouldn't be able to say clearly what those services are and how they're delivered with OHA law, that's where the problem is.
Yeah, exactly.
So do you want ambulance to bring their clients to you rather than a hospital? I mean, you deliver the same sort of care.
I believe that the, again, this modest but meaningful approach we proposed here maintains the historic sort of emergency definition, but really makes it a life-threatening emergency definition and allows other emergencies, as the public commonly thinks of them, to go to super. So, no, we are not interested in serving the ambulance-requiring population. That's not the right solution here. This is serving a very important gap, underserved gap, between the urgent primary layer and the life-threatening emergency services.
So just one other question for me. As a citizen, when I see urgent care and I have a broken arm, I wouldn't hesitate to go to an urgent care facility. But you're saying that you need the word emergency rather than using the word urgent care.
Yes, and so we've designed here as a system, and the system is very intentional, and I think it's very, very efficient for Oregonians, and will be modeled here and around the country. Customers start with digital care. It's the best place to start. It's the lowest cost, lowest risk, highest access point around the clock. If they need more, we hop them, if you will, to 28 neighborhood centers where you get urgent care and primary care. But if you need more, and people do at times need more, rather than going to the emergency room where they're waiting, incurring thousands of dollars of bills, encountering painful friction, we now send them to a place in the middle, right, which is the super clinic, where you get on-demand emergency physicians. It's solving a very important public health problem, and we do that at typically a tenth of the price because we don't charge facility fees, just professional fees for the super services. So it's solving a critical gap problem in the current system, and it's proving now it's working. And if it has to be classified or called only urgent care, yes, that important service will fail because people won't know what to do with it. They won't know how to use it, right, if you can't say what it's there for. That's our concern.
Senator Steiner-Haber.
Yeah.
I have a whole series of questions.
I'm sure.
Bear with me.
Yes.
And if you could sit back a little, Dr. Sanders, because those microphones are super sensitive.
Yeah.
Thank you. I don't even know where to start. Just as a plug for our OHSU Family Medicine Clinic, I've dealt with 80% of what I saw up there, myself personally doing urgent care at OHSU Family Medicine at Gabriel Park. I don't think I could have done the nail through the finger. Depends on where the foreign body in the nose was, but I've relocated thumbs. I've splinted those olecranon fractures. I've sutured those lacerations. So I appreciate everything you're doing, but many of us can do a lot of that there, too. I guess the question I have is, it's not failing now, right? I mean, you say that if you don't have that designation, it's going to fail, but it's not failing now. You've been able to expand your hours. You anticipate expanding them further.
The law, the rule just came into effect.
Sit back.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
Yes, the rule just came into effect February 13th.
Yeah.
So that you've had to change your advertising?
Yes.
Substantially, yeah. Since then?
Yeah.
So can you give us an example of what you've changed since then?
Sure. I mean, Len, can you weigh in? But the most important point is you can't describe your services as being emergency services.
So you can't say that you have board-certified emergency physicians on staff?
Chair Mona Sanderson and Senator Stein Hayward, that is exactly the problem, the confusion that this rule has engendered. If we say that we do something and we use the word emergency, even as it's applied in advertising or communications, board-certified emergency. So once we hit that word, the light goes off. And that's what's different now than it was last session. The OHA has kind of created a situation where we and other people are at risk if we use the word that people commonly used to describe himself. So we came up with the notion that perhaps we just need, for clarity's sake, say that there's two paths. Some people who have got a life-threatening emergency need to go one way, and some people who have got non-life-threatening emergency go the other way. If we use the word emergency, we are subject to somebody at OHA saying, you're in violation, we're going to come and get you, we're going to charge you $500 a day, and we're going to stop you from using that because you're giving the impression somehow that you've got more services at work than you really do, as our Oregon rules indicate. So you're...
Okay. So on a different subject, you said you didn't want ambulances, and yet I think Dr. Zeitzer and I and you, Dr. Sanders, would all agree that probably 80% or more of what comes to a hospital by ambulance doesn't really actually need an ambulance and doesn't need the services that are provided in a traditional hospital emergency department according to the definitions that you're using. I mean, we've all seen people brought in by ambulance that...
Well, thank you for raising that. I did misspeak. My experience is that we can't have emergencies. Ambulances come to this center currently, but we would welcome that. If there were a way to allow what you just said to happen, Zoom Super would welcome that. I think it's a terrific idea.
Okay. And are you taking Medicaid and Medicare patients?
We're not.
And how do you communicate with, Madam Chair, thank you for letting me just ask a bunch of questions. Mm-hmm. How do you communicate with people's primary care physicians if they have a usual source of care? Dr. Zeitzer talked about referring the construction worker with a nail to an in-house orthopedic surgeon, and that's perfectly reasonable. But if a patient has a usual source of care, how are you making sure that connection happens?
Two ways. The primary way that Sarah uses Zoom in that way today is on her phone. She controls all of her records, and then she can download them and deliver them to her provider or then fax them to her provider through the app. That's the most common way. We also have a phone service that also will do that for you as well.
Thank you.
I will say on the Medicaid issue, though, I do believe that we are, folks are here from those groups that could tell us where that is, but we certainly have been in discussions with both Family Care and with Care Oregon, and we would like to be able to offer Zoom Plus Care Super to those services. So that's our plan for this year.
Thank you.
Yep.
Because you know the reimbursement rate is pretty low compared to what, and I'd like to know the Medicaid reimbursement rate versus the reimbursement that you ordinarily
Yes.
have?
Our average total fee per visit last year was just around $300, you know, through all systems, through insured and uninsured customers. And keep in mind, that means, and that includes all services. That includes customers who come in for a visit, for a procedure, for CT scans, all combined. So it's a fraction of the price because we're charging only the professional fees. There are no facility fees charged.
Other comments? All right. Thank you
so much. Thank you.
Thanks.
Is it Bob Beretta? Okay. And Jessica Adamson.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Robert Beretta. I'm a licensed MD in Oregon, and I'm board certified in emergency medicine, and I serve on the board of directors for the Oregon chapter of the American College of Emergency Physicians. I also represented the board on an advisory committee last year with Oregon Health Authority to develop guidelines for using for the commercial use of the term emergency care by urgent care facilities. I'm here to oppose Senate Bill 817 for a number of reasons. We're concerned that this bill is, on its face value, is really just an attempt to circumvent the rule that was created by Oregon Health Authority. We're concerned that circumventing these rules will result in confusion for patients, for treatment delays, and also access to medical care is a big issue here. Sort of the elephant in the room, in a sense, when I hear the other folks talking about overutilization of emergency rooms. That's absolutely true. And probably the number one reason for that is because they cannot go anywhere else. So that's their only option. That's why ERs are overutilized in large part. I want to just mention three laws or rules just to create a context for this bill. One is the Oregon Health Authority rule, which has been discussed already, so I won't reiterate that. And then also is the National Prudent Layperson Standard, which was developed by Congress back in the late 90s in response to insurance companies refusing to reimburse for conditions where someone presented to an emergency room with what they thought was an emergency, perhaps chest pain. They found that they only had pleurisy or muscle strain. And so the insurance company said, well, it turned out not to be an emergency after all, so therefore we're not going to reimburse. The standard layperson rule was set up to define a prudent layperson as someone who possesses an average knowledge of health and medicine, and they consider their condition an emergency. And we feel that the public is pretty good at sorting out the difference between an emergency medical condition and an urgent medical condition. And we don't feel that redefining an urgent medical condition as a non-life-threatening emergency condition serves any purpose other than facilitating advertising with that word. The third law that was enacted in 1986, over 30 years ago by Congress, was the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, or EMTALA, also referred to as the Patient Anti-Dumping Act. This really is one of the big elephants in the room here, because that law applies to every emergency room. We can't turn anyone away, regardless of their ability to pay. And while I applaud ZoomCare for considering expanding their services to Medicare and Medicaid, there's a huge number of folks who don't have any insurance whatsoever, and they can be turned away at the door, and that's a big concern for us. As I mentioned, we feel that they're attempting to circumvent the law by redefining the term emergency and breaking it into two separate definitions: a non-life-threatening emergency condition and a life-threatening emergency condition. We feel that that's already been done with the terms emergency condition and urgent condition. And their own professional organization, the Urgent Care Association of America, is not confused about these definitions. They in their own website, they state, and I'm quoting, urgent care centers treat minor or acutely rising medical conditions that patients feel require immediate medical attention, but that are not medical emergencies. So we feel that the confusion is real. It's been reported that 40% of myocardial infarctions, of heart attacks, arrive by private car. So we think it does make a big difference. I think it's great that they're looking at their statistics over the past 10 years, but I would also point out that advertising as offering emergency services has been going on for less than 2 years, though those statistics don't represent any mishaps that may have occurred as a result. And also, you know, not having reviewed their data when they say 0.013%, I don't know if they're looking at some other indicators the hospitals look at, like delay in care, and I'll come to that in just a sec here. So that was the confusion aspect that we're concerned about. We're concerned about delays in emergency care. The Joint Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations, or JACO, has pointed out that even small delays in diagnosis and treatment can have catastrophic consequences. And as a result of that, they've developed for hospitals what are called core measures. These core measures are not urgent care facilities are not required to look at these core measures. One example is the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association has a standard of 30 minutes from door to drug and 90 minutes from door to balloon for patients having an acute MI that need thrombolytic drugs or balloon angioplasty. 30 minutes is pretty easy to use up if you're being triaged at an urgent care facility. The American Stroke Association has put forward a standard of a door to needle time for thrombolytic treatment of 60 minutes from arrival to the time they receive it. Now, I don't know if their data has addressed any of those delays in care and are looking at the same core measures, but I suspect they're likely not. A big concern for us is access. There are some comments in the Senate bill that I like. On page 1, line 8, they use the phrase, whereas an important public policy goal of Oregon is to optimize reliable consumer access to high-quality care, we feel that that doesn't actually happen in the urgent care center because of their ability to turn away non-paying or pay patients or patients with insurance that isn't covered there. To give another example, going back to the delay just really briefly, I don't have a slideshow, but I just have one story. This is an example of a delay that had both safety and monetary impact. One of our board members, who's an emergency physician, had a patient with a head injury that was hemorrhaging into his brain. The patient arrived at a Zoom care facility, and once they realized what was going on, they transferred the patient to an emergency department, and there was a delay. His CT scan had to be repeated because the CT image disc they received from Zoom care was not compatible with the ED imaging system. It would have been if the patient had come from any other, from a hospital anywhere in Oregon, but the Zoom care technology isn't required to be compatible with hospital technology. Just briefly on the financial aspect of things, I love the fact that the Senate bill, starting on line 5, references costs. Line 11 references wasteful spending. Having to triage someone at an urgent care facility and then send them to the hospital generates additional costs that are passed on to the patient or the insurance carrier. That includes the cost of ambulance transport. It includes minor delays in care, which can potentially result in longer hospital stays. I would say that I, as an emergency physician, I'm extremely respectful and appreciative of the work that urgent care physicians do. We think they do great work. I personally have been practicing emergency medicine for 30 years. If Sarah came to my house saying she was having crushing substernal chest pain, and I don't know how old Sarah is, but let's say she's 50, she's having substernal chest pain, I will call 911 for her and get an ambulance for her and get her to the right facility. If she collapses on my floor, I will do CPR, even though I'm not in a hospital. There's no Oregon law that I'm aware of that prevents me from performing that life-saving procedure in my home. if Sarah comes to my house and she's in anaphylactic shock and I've got an EpiPen in my hand, I will treat her with that EpiPen. What I will not do is I'll not put a sign in my front yard that says, Sarah, come to my house when you have an emergency medical condition. I don't care how much training I've had. That's not appropriate. We feel that a patient's safety should not be put at risk due to confusing signage, or that anyone should lose access to emergency medical services based on their ability to pay. The primary concern of the Oregon chapter of the American College of Emergency Physicians is patient safety. It's not a turf issue. If they would like to us to send half of our or all of our non-paying patients to them, that we would be happy to do that, but I don't think that's their goal. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and I'd be pleased to answer any questions.
Let's hear Jessica, and then I'll open it for questions.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jessica Adamson here on behalf of Providence Health and Services. In addition to eight hospitals that we operate throughout the state, we also operate many urgent cares, walk-in clinics. We do virtual. We have a smart exam, which is an asynchronous app where you can enter information for low-level conditions, get a prescription and assistance without ever seeing a doctor. We take a backseat to no one when it comes to medical innovation, and absolutely agree that reducing the cost of care, getting our patients to the right level of care at the right time, the first time, is ideal. However, we are strongly opposed to this bill. Like the College of Emergency Physicians, Providence was at the table for what was a very lengthy and well conducted process through the Oregon Health Authority to come to these rules. No one wants to see a slow in the pace of innovation, but what this really comes down to is what you referenced, Senator Beyer, a marketing issue. We believe that it is essential that our patients not be confused when it comes time for an emergency about where they ought to be. An emergency is in the emergency room, and it's a process of patient education to make sure that we get those folks where they ought to be. A case of the flu can be seen in an urgent care and can be seen in primary care this time of year. We've got an awful lot of folks with the flu sitting in our emergency departments, and we work really hard to get them to the right place so that we're not having overutilization of the emergency room. As an entity that is at accountability at risk for a large number of folks that we care for as their Providence Health Plan patients, we have no interest in having folks be in an emergency department when they could be cared for much better in urgent care or in a walk-in clinic or in primary care. But this bill does not solve that problem. This bill leads to the potential of having folks show up at places where they believe that they get access to emergency care when in fact it is urgent care. Great urgent care with lots of additional facilities, and nothing about current law prevents Zoom Plus or anyone else from expanding their services to be able to deliver this kind of care in non-emergency department settings. However, being able to call yourself an emergency to provide emergency care leads people to believe that the extent of emergency services are going to be available to them. And the fact is, what we know as an entity that has all of these services available in a wide range of places, just because you're in a board-certified emergency physicians, for whom I have tremendous respect and know that I'm sitting next to one right here, just because you're board certified doesn't mean that if you're in an urgent care setting that you are able to provide the full scope of emergency services. Because when someone walks into a hospital, if they're having an MI or if that abdominal pain is in fact an appendix that may not be about to blow but has blown, those services mean that you are able to then turn to your general surgeon and your anesthesiologist and all of those folks that are on staff, on call, able to come in and perform surgery right then. That's what emergency medicine anticipates, is your ability to see the full course of care. So to say, we've got emergency board board-certified emergency physicians, and we're here to take care of life's little emergencies. That sounds really good, but that may not be able to be followed through on because you don't have the full range of facilities to do that. I have a lot of confidence that our friends at Zoom Plus, who are tremendously talented and have built out an innovative model of care, can be equally as innovative in their marketing materials and drive folks to their facilities. We've figured out how to do that and get our patients in the right places in our non-emergency room facilities and make sure that we're getting folks the care that they need in a timely fashion and high quality without sending in an emergency room. We welcome others to join us in that effort, but this bill is not the path to that, and we'd urge you to not move it forward.
Who was at the rulemaking with OHA? It was you. Zoom Care was there. I see nods, so the Zoom Care hospitals. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
All right, questions for this panel? All right, the final panel we have is Elizabeth Remley, Courtney Dresser, and Andy Easton.
Good afternoon, Courtney Dresser for the Oregon Medical Association. You've heard a lot of testimony already, and our testimony is on OLIS. I think the one point that hasn't necessarily been brought up that we want to just highlight is the opening of the Practice Medical Act, or a 677, and these definitions that could really cause some confusion, not so much with the public, but with our own providers, and also the issue of kind of redefining and having subcategories of different type of care. So that's our part that's a little disconcerting for us, is where they're putting these definitions. We also have other concerns, but you've heard most of those concerns already, and they were discussed during the rulemaking process too.
Chair Monis Anderson and members of the committee, Elizabeth Remley on behalf of Cambia Health Solutions in opposition to Senate Bill 817. In brief, because you've heard a lot of the same concerns that we share, we don't understand the need for this bill. There is no serious regulatory obstacle to opening an urgent care clinic, which is the level of care this bill seems to describe. If the purpose is to create a means to open freestanding emergency rooms or something closely resembling them, then we have strong objections. Where freestanding ERs have been allowed, the pattern is utterly predictable. Cherry pick higher income geographies and charge very high rates for service, easily rendered at a low cost point of care. In addition, we have some serious concerns with the some of the technical language in the bill. We think that some of the language is redundant. And finally, from a population health and medical perspective, we worry, again, about the cherry-picking locations, both locations and geographical populations for this particular service. We also wonder what would happen if a patient showed up at the door needing more serious care, where they would go and how they would get there. And we want to make sure that we're keeping costs for these kinds of services down. So that's it.
Good afternoon, Chair Monis Anderson and members of the committee. I'm Andy Easton, the Associate Vice President of Government Relations for the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. We represent 59 hospitals across the state, of which they all have emergency room departments, and many of them also have either a management agreement or a joint venture for an urgent or immediate care. And I'm here today on their behalf raising some concerns with the proposed bill in Senate Bill 817. Urgent care and immediate care facilities provide a very important component in the full spectrum of care. They are a place where a patient can go if they cannot get into their doctor's office soon enough or if they have an acute symptom. Urgent care and immediate care are not hospitals, and they are not equipped to treat emergency conditions, nor are they licensed to be an emergency room. We find Senate Bill 817 confusing in three ways. One, it's confusing to the patient. A patient who believes he or she has an emergency need for care is more likely to select a facility that advertises emergency care than a facility that advertises urgent care. The patient is going to go and have a harder time with the new label and self-diagnosis of his or her own condition. Speaking for myself, I feel like I can determine what is a urgent versus emergency, but when it comes to a life-threatening or a non-life-threatening, I may not be able to decide that. The bill is also confusing to those who regulate facilities. Currently in this state, urgent care and either urgent care or immediate care has two ways of being licensed. One is under the facility of a hospital outpatient satellite, for which it has high regulations that are outlined in the administrative rules. The other way is through a provider's license, their professional license. And unless they have other services that they provide, such as imaging, they are not regulated. It's also confusing to payers. It is unclear to how payers will react when a patient makes a decision about to seek treatment in an urgent care under this definition. Will the payer refuse to pay an ED visit because they had an non-life-threatening condition? We are also concerned that they, at this time, do not take Medicaid patients. So I'd like to close that labels can and do make a difference. If a patient goes to a relabeled urgent care facility instead of an ED, it seems that as a matter of logic, there will be more patients who need life-threatening emergency care who will go first to a facility operating under a non-life-threatening emergency care, thus putting those additional patient lives at risk. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions for this panel? Okay, thank you. Well, there's not a lot of excitement, it seems, from this committee for the bill. And so it will need to have, you will need to be convincing the members of the committee on if we want to pass this bill, you're going to need to convince the members of this committee. All right? Questions? All right. With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 817. And let's see. Thursday, March 2nd, the Senate Healthcare Committee, it's scheduled an informational hearing on exploring the cost drivers of healthcare in Oregon. I know the House has already had this presentation. It has been very well received, and I know that it'll be very well received by this committee. The premise is definitely a renewed interest in quality, value, and cost containment in healthcare. And we need to share that fundamental understanding of what we have, why we have it, the challenges in front of us as a state with respect to ensuring Oregon has a financially sustainable healthcare system. So the information we hear on Thursday will hopefully help us in the near future engage in conversations about continuing to transform healthcare in Oregon. Questions on that? I look forward to having that. Have I covered everything? Okay. Thank you, everyone, and we're adjourned.